Governor Quinn, Secretary Hannock, Chair Wolf.
Here.
Director Banks. Director Canham.
Here.
Director Morris.
Here.
Director Cradle.
Here.
Director Ross.
Here.
Director Saldana.
Here.
Director Towns.
Here.
Director Wiser.
Here.
We have a quorum.
Thank you. We're going to start with a review of the bonding basics, which directors had asked for some time ago, and then the debt profile update presentation. Oh, I'm sorry.
So, before Mike begins, you know, I know we worked very hard on this presentation, so thank you for that. I also wanted to thank a couple of our directors who gave us some positive, I think, feedback that helped us, refine this and make it more readily understandable. I also want to thank him for his hard work with the liquidity working group and the directors who worked on that, for their efforts to enhance the agency's debt portfolio and really drive to successful completion of those liquidity agreements on a large portion of our synthetic fixed rate bonds. And if you don't know what that means now, you certainly will after this presentation. These agreements have resulted in a ratings upgrade for these particular bonds. So they were received, I think, very well by the marketplace. And again, thank you very much, Mike, to you and your team for all of your hard work on that, keeping a close eye on the market.
Any idea if any bonds in the United States have been upgraded recently?
But the upgrade was the result of the letter of credit.
It's the result.
Yeah. So our underlying.
Nevertheless, I think
it was a good step.
But at a time when a lot of people are getting knocked down a notch, it's good that A, we held on our own and got an enhancement here.
No, it was an incredible effort to try to take out that one liquidity provider that was providing liquidity for the entire $1.3 billion to replace it with the new team of, what is it, we ended up with
eight, and then to
do the term out so that they don't all occur at the same time, which gives you some flexibility going forward, because as you have to monitor the market, you need to be able to know that you're in control of certain things and other things you're not. So I think it's a great effort.
I would diversification like to say is good.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, it's been the support and patience of the board that's allowed us to get to what I think is a good interim result here. Others, I think, reacted really quickly to some severe financial market condition, and the board really has supported kind of a measured, patient approach, and I think it's bearing out in our interest.
Which we will also hear more about as we go through these presentations. So,
sorry.
No, it's no problem. Thank you very much. And Mike, if you'd like to begin.
Before I start, there is some person I'd like to introduce. Kathy Williams is our new Deputy Chief of Finance.
Yeah,
Kathy.
Okay. Welcome.
He has a background as a managing director at J.P. Chase and has been a partner in the investment consulting firm, focusing primarily in private equities, but obviously has great analytical capability and is someone that's helped put these presentations together. So anyway, I want to recognize Kathy.
Thank you. Welcome.
As with many, I think, professions, this particular area and this particular presentation really is a discussion of a lot of familiar concepts, kind of veiled in unfamiliar terms. So the purpose here today, I think, was to try to familiarize everyone with the terminology that we use, and equate that terminology to kind of what you experience and know about your everyday type of business or personal activities in terms of financing. Some of the topics that we want to cover include the definition and types of bonds, key features of bonds, how we might go about measuring interest or yield, assessing risk, related to different types of bonds or debt securities, and the process by which we actually issue the bonds and raise the funds that we utilize for our capital program. So we start with a brief one man's definition of a bond, which is a debt security used to borrow funds from investors, repaid pursuant to the terms of all of the covenants or provisions that are included in the bond documents. Bond issuers, obviously, they aren't limited to governments, but the tollway is a government issuer. Corporations, special purpose trusts, nonprofit organizations, and many other types of entities are in the bond market raising funds. With respect to security for the bonds, and more specifically, maybe municipal bonds, general obligation and revenue bonds are the primary categories that provide securities for the bonds, general obligation being kind of the full faith and credit and taxing power of that government organization. And in the case of the tollway, revenue bonds, which are a specific pledge of the revenue that we're collecting, but not a pledge kind of the taxing power of the state. Reasons that we issue bonds? Well, the tollway primarily issues for a couple of reasons. First, to fund capital expenditures and our new capital programs. To fund capitalized interest. And capitalized interest is essentially funds that are set aside to pay interest during a construction period when you may not have the revenues to pay the interest during that period. And debt service reserve funds, or reserves that are set aside in case there is some shortfall in revenue at some point in the future, that you can look to a reserve you set aside to pay the bondholder. Again, it provides additional security to the bondholder. A second major or third major purpose for issuing bonds is ones that we've been discussing now for months, to refinance existing debts. You can refinance for a variety of reasons. First, and probably most common, is to reduce the cost of borrowing, reduce your debt service. The second is to reduce risk related to the kind of security that you might have out in the market or that you might currently own. And the third is to kind of exit some of the limitations or covenants that you may have on your existing debt, which provide you more flexibility or freedom to do other kinds of projects or programs. We've attached to this presentation an appendix with some of the definitions, but just quickly, par value, when you refer to par value, that's typically the face or stated amount of the bond. In the fixed rate business in municipal bonds, this typical bond has a face value minimum denomination of $5,000. The variable rate actually can be lower than that. Coupon interest rate is the stated interest rate, which applies to that stated face value or par value. The maturity is when the bond is scheduled to be retired or paid off. Default risk, I think not a surprise, is the risk of non-payment. Premium or discount. Premium or discount represent a price or amount that you would pay above the par amount of the bond or above the stated face amount of the bond. And discount, which it sounds like, would be if you paid a price for the bond which was less than the stated or par of the bond. And depending upon whether you pay a premium or a discount, that's going to affect the yield or the actual effective rate of interest that you receive on that as an investor. Call provisions, as I think Director Morris has pointed out, is simply the ability to pay off the bonds early. It has a feature that allows you to call the bond back and refund it with a hopefully lower rate of interest. And finally, another issue we're going to talk a little bit about is the taxability of interest. Okay, a bond's value or
we looked at it in the traditional sense of, you know, a trade-off between risk and return, or return and risk. Generally, Treasury securities issued by the U.S. government, the largest economy in the world, is deemed to be or is assumed to be kind of the risk-free interest rate. But there are other factors that would affect the rate that the tollway or any other issuer would need to pay to attract investors to buy their debt. One of them is the credit risk, the risk that the entity is actually going to make the payment on all the interest and principal amounts due, and the risk that they would actually make those payments timely, that you don't have to wait or be delayed. Tax risk is the risk that changes in the tax code as an investor might change the value of your security. In some cases, it's a risk if the rate, if rates increase, excuse me, tax rates increase, federal tax rates. In other cases, it could be impact your investment or your bond, the value of it, if tax rates drop. Liquidity risk. Liquidity risk is the risk of not being able to identify another market or a secondary buyer for your bonds, typically, is how we think of it. Is your bond one which, when an investor buys, they have a strong belief that if they need to sell it, they'll have a readily available market to sell it? And anything else that might affect the risk of the cash flow to the bondholders. And those all will affect the rate of return that was required by the investor. So, Illinois tollway bonds. Illinois tollway bonds are government bonds and typically referred to generically as a municipal bond. It's a revenue bond. It has a senior lien on our revenue, which means it has the first, after we pay operating expenses, has the first call or first, has the first pledge, first lien against the revenue. Maturities on our bond under our covenants are, and actually under the law, the tollway enacting legislation, are limited to 25 years. So we can have maturities that range anywhere from a year to 25 years. Currently, about 68% of the debt that we have outstanding is fixed rate, which means that it's the kind of traditional bond with a stated interest rate on it that doesn't change until maturity. And this remaining 32% is, as we've just gone through, the synthetic fixed rate product, which is a variable rate bond, which we've coupled with a swap agreement to create synthetically what approximates a fixed rate of borrowing.
Mike?
Yes?
On the maturity, now the life of our assets are typically over 25 years, though. Because typically, you know, so even though under statute we're limited to 25
right.
years,
right.
the assets that we finance with our bond borrowings, like the roadways we built, have a life of
The life of the assets can range any as long as even 50 to 60 years on a newly constructed road.
So I'm just suggesting that a way to reduce debt service when we have like cash flow limitations is to extend the maturity, which a lot of municipalities and issuers are doing now, because if it's tied to the life of the assets, you can actually justify extending the maturity
But aren't we limited by state legislation?
Local
government can go 40 years, but I think we can't go beyond 40
years. No, I understand the point.
But you think there might be a
justification for extending the maturity out to at least 30 years, which will give you some debt service reduction. And the justification is that the life of the assets we finance are actually in excess of 30 years.
We do when we issue bonds have finance a combination of newly reconstructed
right.
roads as well as rehabilitations of those roadways, and the rehabilitation cycles, depending upon the age of the road, can be much shorter. So while 25 years is still likely to be shorter than the total average life, it would be significantly less than the 50 or 60 of just the newly constructed roadway.
But it's, I think Director Saldana's point is we should think about whether or not we want to change the legislation. Just because you move the end date out doesn't mean that you have to have every bond issue reflect the longest possible period.
Well, in fact, you have to have an opinion issued that the assets being financed have the life. And if you're doing 7 and 8 year rehabilitation and 40 year new road, it would be an accounting factor somewhere in the 27, 28 year range anyway. So the accounting opinion and engineering opinion would also determine the life. So we couldn't just go hog wild and borrow for squad cars for 30 or 40 years.
But the majority of our borrowing is for
25.
Yeah.
It's something to think about.
Really. Thank you. That's quite all right.
I learn something new in bond basics every time.
Tollway ratings. The tollway ratings are AA3 by Moody's, which is the equivalent of AA-, and Fitch and S&P carry those ratings for the tollway's underlying credit strength.
A perfect score is AAA.
And as we note down here at the bottom, interest on tollway bonds is exempt from the federal income tax, but it is taxable by the state. And that will be important later because there are many states where municipal and state bonds are tax exempt at the state level as well, and that affects their value. Bond rating categories. As you can see, we have lumped these categories, as Director Morris mentioned, all the way up to AAA. AAA to BAA, Moody's as investment grade, and then there's a number of categories that would be characterized as non-investment grade, or to use a kind of popular term, junk bonds, as you get down to the lower end of those non-investment grade categories. In addition to
investment grade too, Mike, is important. Banks can't buy non-investment grade bonds. So you lose a whole stable of potential buyers.
In addition to the letter grade, as you saw from our rating previously, there are additional modifiers for AA and A and the B letter grades of 1, 2, and 3 for Moody's, with 1 being the equivalent of a plus and 3 being the equivalent of a minus. And plus and minus categories for Fitch and Standard & Poor's. Additional gradations of those individual letter categories. With respect to tollways, the Illinois Tollway is among the highest rated tollways in the country, and in large part because of the essentiality of our system and the low rate of tolling that we have in our system and the stability of the income generated by the system. And then finally, there, in addition to the modifiers of plus and minus, there are additional outlook indications by the rating agencies. And an outlook is kind of a prospective look by the rating agencies about a possible change in the rating over time. And it's usually, they usually take a 1 to 2 year kind of outlook on the on those ratings. And both Moody's and Standard & Poor's has the tollways outlook at stable, and Fitch has the tollways outlook on its AA minus bond at negative.
And can you just give us one sentence? I think everybody saw the clips, but just to remind people why they had the two different perspectives.
I think with respect to Fitch on our underlying rating, their concern relates to primarily relates to whether the coverage ratios have fallen down below 2, and they have concern about the tollways or the state's willingness to increase toll rates if those coverage ratios would not recover, would stay down for extended periods of time. They would really like to see coverage ratios of 2 times as opposed to the 1.8 that we're currently carrying.
Sure.
guess that was more than one sentence. One of the things that we wanted to indicate then is, well, what does it mean? What does a downgrade mean with respect to the actual financial impact of a downgrade? And it means different things at different times. Back in July of 2008, which was prior to the kind of financial crisis, the spreads between, or the costs of borrowing at a AA versus a AAA, or an A versus a AA, was significantly less than it is now. The penalty associated with having a lower rated credit was less before the financial crisis. High grade credits became a premium after the financial crisis. Investors wanted security. They wanted highly rated bonds, particularly in the municipal area, I believe. And as you can see, the additional interest that you need to pay for lower rated credits is higher now in 2011 than it was in 2008. One of the points I think I should also make with respect to these particular yields and rating categories is these reflect kind of high-grade credits with tax-exempt status in both the federal and state level, typically. And the tollway actually trades closer to the A-rated category here, not because it's viewed as an A-rated credit, but because of some of the fact that we're not tax-exempt at the state level, and also to a degree because of the headlines associated with the financial issues in the state, as well as the financial issues facing municipal governments and tollways across the country. The toll road sector itself has a negative outlook. So if we were to price a 20-year tollway bond today, we would really be closer to that A rate than we would to that AA rate. And I mentioned down here a downgrade from a AA minus to an A plus on the amount of $100 million would cost the tollway currently an estimated $300,000 per year. So I want to talk a little bit about some of the credit risk and bond rating factors. The rating agencies look at financial performance of the agency, and that will include the amount of debt you have relative to your asset base. It will include your coverage of debt, how much revenue you have relative to the debt service that you're required to pay. It will reflect the credit rating agency's view of your budget process and if you've balanced the budget and you have strong financial management. It will also reflect their view of the condition of the asset that you have and the needs of that, the capital needs of that asset over time and how well it's managed. It also reflects contractual provisions that are in the bond documents, and we've listed a number of different contractual provisions that would be considered in rating the credit. Other factors, not surprisingly, are the stability of the income stream that supports or pays off the bonds, the regulatory environment that you operate within, potential liabilities, lawsuits or environmental issues that are outstanding that provide some degree of uncertainty to the financial prospects for the agency and for the bond, and accounting policies. do you produce annual financial statements that are standardized and governmentally accepted accounting principles? Are they timely? Are they understandable? And does the investor and the credit rating agency believe they have sufficient financial information to make sound decisions about your financial position? Oh, good. Okay. A lot of little wavy lines here. The red lines represent the U.S. Treasury rates, the U.S. Treasury yield curve, starting in with a one-year rate all the way to a 30-year rate. And the dark red line represents the current, and the dotted red line represents four years ago. And we wanted to make a couple of points on this slide. First, you can see how much that yield curve has steepened in the U.S. Treasury security yield curve. That's important to us because we borrow at the long end of the yield curve and we invest at the short end of the yield curve. One of the things that's happened in recent times then is when the yield curve steepens, we still have to borrow at the longer, higher rate of interest and reinvest or invest our current revenues at a lower rate of interest. So we're in a better position. We would prefer to have a flatter yield curve in the position that we're in than a steep yield curve like this. The other point we wanted to make by this is to compare the spread between muni rates and the treasury rates. And without being able to kind of phase each of these in as we go through, what's happened over time is that tax-exempt yields, which were below, let's just point out here, in 2007, were below treasury yields, are now, as you can see, above treasury yields. And what that is, again, is evidence of credit risk is at a premium. Treasuries are valued much higher than lower rated credits than it was several years ago. This is an unusual situation historically to have a double A rated bond or even an A rated bond trade consistently higher in interest, even with the tax exemption, than treasury rates. Okay, now we want to talk a little bit about the bond process itself in terms of the issuance process. Principal members of the team, and this is by no means all of the parties involved, but principal members. First, the financial advisor is advised with the structuring of the plan of finance and help assure that the bonds are priced at a fair value when you go to market. Bond counsel, which interprets the laws and assists with drafting the bond documents, the board resolution, and most importantly, giving an opinion that the bonds are legally issued. The trustee is the bank that will actually receive the proceeds of the bond issue once the deal is completed or closed. They will be a party that assists in the investment and disbursement of the funds and also will assist in monitoring disclosure and administering repayment of the debt. On the other side, we have the senior managing underwriter. This is typically the investment bank that would lead the process of marketing the bonds or selling the bonds to investors, taking orders and coordinating that sales effort with all the members of the underwriting syndicate. Typically, we would have 10 to 12 firms involved in a tollway underwriting. And they provide, hopefully, a secondary market support for the bonds. In other words, they would be purchasers and sellers of our bonds in the secondary market. We've listed a couple more that we've been referring to recently that apply only to the variable rate side of the market, and those are remarketing agents. Remember, variable rate products, these are sold or remarketed. The interest rates are reset every week. So there needs to be a party that can reset the rates every week and or remarket the bonds to new investors if the current holders decide that that rate is not acceptable to them. And lastly, the liquidity banks. And I wanted to point out two issues at the bottom. We have a combination of standby letters of credit and letters of credit. And the difference between those two is that a letter of credit, a bank would actually pay the principal and interest directly on every time a payment date is due, and we would reimburse that bank on the same day. But a standby letter of credit is only tapped when it's necessary to purchase bonds where the remarketing agent fails to find other buyers. So the standby modifier is appropriate in that. Time schedule. First step, board approves the financing team and authorizes the transaction. The bond documents and disclosure materials are prepared. We develop credit materials and discuss the and get credit rating agency get ratings from the credit rating agencies. Then market, price, and sell the bonds and close the transaction. All of that in a typical deal would take about 90 days. That's after we go through the process of procuring all of the principal members of the team, because that process usually takes longer than actually doing the transaction. And finally, after we close the bonds, we have post-reporting and compliance issues that need to be completed, not only to ensure the debt is repaid, but to ensure that we stay in compliance with federal tax law provisions. That mercifully brings this to a close.
I was impressed with your slide on the timeline. I think for originally you didn't even know how to go back and forth, now you know how to do all the
I was once told early on that my PowerPoint presentations were on a scale of 1 to 10, about a 1.5.
I tend to think you're moving up.
But with a great deal of work and a lot of effort, this person thought he could get me to a 4.
As long as you keep the lines up there, we don't know what your PowerPoints are. Are there questions about this presentation?
I think, importantly, you took a very complex subject and distilled it down to terms that most anybody can get a better handle on it than just saying, they think of bonds, they think of U.S. savings bonds, they don't understand the complexities, and I think you distilled that down well. I think it also reiterates Director Morris's comment earlier about the rating might not have gone up. More importantly, it didn't go down. Being stable is very important, and you've demonstrated that in what it would cost us if we had downgrades. And when you start to see it in those terms and that simple, you start to understand. If you take a hit, that one basis point equates to $300,000 on $100 million. That adds up real quick, and adding up always sounds like that's a good thing. In this case, it's absolutely in the wrong direction. So I thought the presentation was well done and very thoughtful. So thank you.
I just want to again express my thanks to the Director Morris, who I think gave us some really good feedback. And it's always when you're working on these things so closely, sometimes you miss some steps or some information that's critical, and that was helpful. And Mike, it did come a long way with all of your hard work too, and that of your team. So thank you very much.
Very helpful, Mike.
Yeah.
Mike, on the swap rates, the synthetic. Are they all based on the mid-swap rate, or what is
the swap rate rates, yeah, that we, the valuations that I think we have, and are on the mid-swap rate, yes. So terminating those obviously costs a few basis points more than that.
You're not going to be able to do that yet.
Because you get to answer that question.
In fact,
more
the next one, when you get to slide 14, we'll manage to take everybody back to confusion land.
Well, at least it was colored.
You thought the last one was exciting.
Time for our debt profile update.
Everybody's standing.
Well,
up
the first part was abstract. This is
right.
Real money now.
It is real money.
About. So this is the real stuff.
Yeah.
And just after this significant event for us, we thought it was worthwhile to walk through so that everybody understood the full picture of our debt profile, and Mike is up again to walk us through this presentation, so.
You know, I would like to start with, like to recognize people that can't hear it. Bill O'Connell spent a tremendous amount of time and effort on putting these bank agreements together. Bill is taking a well-deserved couple of days off, so he's not with us here today, but I want to make sure that doesn't go unrecognized.
And anyone who comes to these closings will see there are massive numbers of people behind all of this.
Yes, yes.
And I would just comment that the first closing I went to, it was not a Rainbow Coalition and mark of diversity in the room. I think this last closing, it was distinctly different, so I want to congratulate them. I don't know whether they flew in people from someplace else, but each of the groups had the banks and the underwriters and everybody had a nice, diverse group of people.
And I want to thank the chair for pushing diversity in that arena. Somebody who has practiced in that area for more than 20 years, and they have not seen a market change, especially in some of the big institutions. I appreciate you.
Everybody here on the board and the management team as well. So, but I just wanted to comment because I actually dwelt in there too.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. Debt profile update. This. What we want to start with is our debt profile as of January 2010. In December of 2009 and January of 2010, the board asked us to set out on a process to try to reduce our exposure to synthetic fixed rate debt. At the time, we had the traditional fixed rate of $2.5 billion, or about 61% of all of the debt outstanding. And we had 39%, which was synthetic fixed rate or variable rate swapped to fixed, almost 40% of our debt. We also had almost all of that variable rate debt supported by one bank, Dexia, which had almost $1.5 billion of the $1.6 billion of liquidity provided for the tollway. So the goal set out in January to reduce that variable rate debt, to diversify the number and types of banks that provide support for the variable rate debt. Our policy guideline was that we would like to reduce our variable rate debt to below 25%, whether it be hedged or unhedged, and that in no case should 15% of our total debt exceed 15% of our total debt as unhedged variable rate, with no where the rate actually does float from week to week, with no offsetting swap agreement. Currently, we have no unhedged variable rate debt, and I don't think in the tollway's history there may have been a few months back in '93 where we had unhedged variable rate debt, but by and large, we have not had true unhedged variable rate debt in our portfolio.
Would you target having unhedged variable rate?